and welcome to Better Done Than Perfect, a show for SaaS founders and product people. Today, our awesome guest is Brennan Dunn, the email automation guru and author of multiple courses. And we're going to talk about mastering email software and the hardships people face when doing so. This show is brought to you by UserList, the best tool for sending onboarding emails and segmenting your SaaS users. To follow the best practices, download our free printable email planning worksheets at userlist.com/worksheets. Hey, Brennan.
Hey, Jane. Thanks so much for having me, and it's awesome as always to reconnect.
We're absolutely excited. I'm intrigued to pick your brain on how you've been developing all these massive learning material that you have, you know. But before that, can you tell our listeners what you do and what you're famous for?
Yeah. So nowadays I'm kind of doing two things that I'm focused on. One of which is a software company called Right Message, where we do used to market as personalization software. Now it's more lead generation software. And when I'm not doing that, I'm helping people with, well, what do you do when you generate email subscribers? And I'm doing that at a website called createandsell.co. And my focus there is producing courses and free material on more intermediate to advanced level strategies and things you can do with email marketing. So that's the two active things I'm doing at the moment. I also do own a company called Double Your Freelancing, which is where, to be honest, most of this came from. So a lot of the experimentation and the learning that went into what I do today came from that business because, specifically speaking, that's a one-person business myself where I've sold everything over the last 8 or 9 years entirely over email. So, you know, I kind of learned a lot of what I'm doing nowadays through that journey.
Yeah, I've just recently saw your name being featured in the Trends VC report in like one person million dollar companies. So
oh, really?
Like, who knows about that?
Interesting. Okay.
And that's how we met like 10 years ago, something like that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I know you went to I had a European conference. You were there. I think we met in person there. Was that the first time we met? We met at MicroConf too, a few times. I mean, we've obviously crossed paths at the various conferences throughout the years. But yeah, and you helped me way back when with PlanScope, I remember.
That
with
was
the interface
long
for it.
Ago.
And that was,
yeah.
When I was going through Dropbox and cleaning it up the other week, and I saw like the PlanScope directory, and then I saw all your like PSDs and everything in there that you helped me with. So that was awesome.
PlanScope's been sold. There is no PSDs anymore in this world. And
I know.
It's nobody's doing conferences either. Crazy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that's, I guess, what I've been doing.
Why we got together is because you were very famous for that first course called Mastering Drip ages ago. Then you created ConvertKit as a follow-up. And then we're talking about creating a course about UserList soon. Mm-hmm. And it looks like you've got the system there. So tell us, how different was it creating a course for the second time as opposed to creating it for the first time? I'm not talking like video production and everything, because of course you've got that figured out. I'm talking content and like the learning component.
Well, so the first one was Mastering Drip. And that was, God, what, 3, maybe even 4 years ago now. Kind of forgot how long ago I started it. But the idea there initially was just to kind of share some of the interesting things that I thought you could do with Drip. So it wasn't very structured in the sense of like, here's a framework, here's a system to follow. Instead, it was kind of a grab bag of, here's a lot of interesting things you can do, like SMSing people with Drip. They now have that as a native feature, but back in the day, you could only do it through like wiring it up to Zapier, to Twilio and things like that. So I would record video lessons on how to do interesting things like that initially. It kind of evolved into this framework that is kind of what I repurposed that course to then teach, and what I also, when I did Mastering ConvertKit, focused on, which is this model of from acquiring new leads to what I call this LBPS system, which is a educational pitch system that is meant to deliver a lot of value, establish trust, pitch somebody in a way that is relevant to them, and then finds out why they didn't buy if they don't buy. And then from there, putting them into a evergreen newsletter. And there's obviously a lot of other content and tutorials around that, but that's kind of the main thing that I advise 90% of people to set up. And the reason for that system is when I was building Right Message initially, I wasn't paying myself a salary, but I stopped focusing on WR freelancing. But I had set all that up with WR freelancing, and it allowed me to maintain pretty much the same level of income without actually logging into Drip or ConvertKit or whatever and creating emails and keeping my list warm or anything like that. Because I had automation in place that handled all the nurturing and pitching without my involvement or constant involvement. So it kind of shifted to this thing of like, not to be morbid, but what if you got hit by a bus and could never log into, whether it be Drip, ConvertKit, user list, or whatever again, would business more or less continue as usual? And, you know, my focus initially was on creator types, so people creating courses and so on. It also now has included software companies, including even some agencies who are doing this to generate kind of high value leads and clients and everything. But yeah, I mean, the ultimate thing that I'm trying to do with these courses is to say, what can I do to show somebody that you don't need to be like, if you can log in as few times as possible to your email marketing software, that's going to let you focus more on acquisition and more on research and development, like building new products, bettering the products you already have or whatever else. And that I make this argument that automation done right is good for us because obviously we can focus more on other things like I just mentioned. And it's better for our audience because getting, if I'm on your email list and I happen to get whatever email you sent that day, is that really the best email for me to get that day from you? So I try to make an argument throughout the course that email automation done right is good for us, but it's also better for the recipients, for our subscribers.
How did it feel to diverge from your core teaching like industry, which was freelancing, teaching people how to make money online, to start teaching email automation? Did you ever feel like you're like a two-headed dragon or anything like that?
No, I actually, to be honest, I felt a little better. There was always a bit of me when teaching people like the business side of freelancing and consulting that I thought was a little too kind of hand in the air, kind of wishy-washy, because it was always like, you know, it was kind of teaching people how to be more confident when it comes to pitching a client or something like that. Whereas with email marketing automation, it's like teaching somebody how to code, I think, where it's very cut and dry, like do this, then do that, and here's what will happen. So I actually have preferred teaching people marketing or email marketing over business or freelancing because I find it a little more specific. I can be a lot more tactical and specific. Whereas like with, you know, say freelancing, I can do my best to try to equip somebody with what they need to be more successful with their business. But ultimately at the end of the day, a lot of it is kind of these soft skill type things that people just need to kind of learn really on their own, I think.
So you put together your first email marketing course about Drip. Mm-hmm. And then what happened? What kind of feedback did you get? What kind of troubles did people run into after buying your course?
Yeah, so the feedback was a lot better than I thought. Specifically, things that I thought were kind of more or less obvious when it came to using Drip were eye-openers to people. So things like the way that I think about organizing data. Because I always approached, when I started mastering Drip, I approached Drip like a software developer. So I thought about data integrity and cleaning things up and keeping things clean and making things scalable and having good documentation and testing methods. And a lot of people were just going into Drip and just kind of randomly adding tags on people and randomly setting up automations that would sometimes overwhelm people. So coming with a kind of a programmer's mentality to Drip and teaching that to non-programmers really helped a lot of people. Now, there were always issues with some of the things I taught specifically around personalization, where that usually includes dabbling with liquid code, where if you're not a developer or not a programmer by nature, can be somewhat intimidating because it is kind of like adding code within an email message. So the one, I don't know if you'd call it a complaint, but the one thing that caused people to stumble when they would go through the course was that they would conceptually understand, I want to tailor my messaging. I want to give people more relevant emails that are hitting their inbox at the right time. But to do that right, you kind of sometimes need to think about things like Boolean logic and thinking through the stitching together of an email message rather than me going into Drip and saying, here's an email, I'm writing it from top to bottom. Instead, you're kind of, you know, building an email with different blocks of personalized content, depending on who somebody is. And the testing of that and the, what is this actually going to look like for the recipient was always hard for me because most email marketing platforms don't really make that easy for people. You can usually preview an email as a specific subscriber, but it's kind of hard to say, all right, here's an email. What does it look like if this is true or that's true or this other thing is true? So that was always the difficulty, I think, with a lot of customers of the course was when it came to personalization, ensuring that it actually does come out with a human readable email that makes sense to people.
Give us an example of such email that's like stitched together. Are we talking like the body of the email promoting one thing or maybe supplying educational content and then maybe providing a customizable call to action postscriptum or something like that?
I think all of the above. So like, for instance, with Write Message, we have an email course that has, I did the math on this, about 19,000 variations. And that's not including the first name. So that's the actual email content. Seems overwhelming, but what it's really just doing is it's saying we have all these different inputs. So one input could be what email marketing software to use, which is that Write Message we integrate with a bunch. So, you know, ConvertKit, Drip, HubSpot, whatever. Another thing that we collect data on is what kind of business are you? Are you selling courses? Are you selling software? Do you sell services? And we have all these different things about, you know, what is it they're trying to achieve? Where are they stuck now? And basically, when you combine all of the different types of people based on their responses, it's 19,000 something combinations. And what we've done is we've made it so the actual email content itself. So when you join the email course, it's really a crash course on email personalization. So we're able to kind of show how we're personalizing our emails, which you typically wouldn't want to do. But what's nice about it is if you use ActiveCampaign and you run a course business, and you are just starting out and you have zero experience with personalization and, you know, so on and so forth, what's going to happen is the emails themselves, so the examples used, like a paragraph that shows a specific use case or a specific call to action at the bottom, like why you should use Write Message, all of that will change contingent on these different inputs. So, you know, this sentence might change and include stuff about ActiveCampaign. But then a few sentences later, it's going to change to talk about a software or a course business. And then later on, when it that closes the email, it might change to talk about how Write Message can help you start your new course business in a way that would be better than if you wait, you know, until you've already built something that has a lot of customers and so on and so forth. So that's kind of what I'm getting at is being able to make it so when somebody reads that email, they're thinking, all right, yes, I've told this person or I've told this company that I use ActiveCampaign, that I run a course business and so on, but I'm not needing to sift through a bunch of examples about SaaS or examples about agencies or anything like that that don't apply to me. I'm just getting really high quality examples and content that fit the profile that I've given, you know, through my own segmentation. So that's kind of what I'm getting at with this email personalization. It's not just putting somebody's name at the top of my email. It's making it so the content or the message in an email is highly relevant as possible for the end recipient.
So one thing that people struggle with is, you know, doing a little bit of liquid coding inside the message to include that. What are the other struggles that are obvious to you as an experienced person, but are eye-opening, as you mentioned?
Yeah. So I think one thing is about data. I have a very big issue, again, with people who default to using tags for segmenting their list, specifically because tags are not authoritative, meaning that if you have a tag, if you tag somebody based on what they say their favorite color is, and there's a tag for green, red, and blue, well, if they somehow end up with two of those or three of those, and you need to make a decision in your personalization on, depending on somebody's favorite color, show this. If with tags, there's no way to kind of self clean up. So if you add a red tag, presumably you'd want to remove the green tag and the blue tag if they exist. So one of the things I teach in the courses is how to think about using custom fields to do segmentation instead of tags. So like platforms like ConvertKit and Drip really do default to tags. So a lot of that was kind of getting people to rethink how they consider segmenting their audience. Because if you do it wrong, you end up with a really messy database and you end up getting in the position where you delete something and then it breaks some liquid code that's embedded in some onboarding email that you forgot about. And it just becomes this really messy experience. And again, all of this comes from my coding experience because I'm basically taking the same principles that all of us learn as developers and applying that to email marketing about data integrity and stuff like that. So that's a big stumbling block for a lot of people. There's also, which I think ties into it, the worry that if there's too much automated layers in a system, in an email system, then you might end up overwhelming somebody because what if they're getting like, you know, some automated pitch this week, but you're doing a live product launch this week too. And then now they're getting like double pitch emails and stuff like that. So there's a lot of fear of the unknown with automation where going through and just sending live email broadcasts is kind of safe. I'm writing this email today. It's going out to these people today. I know that's happening. But the problem then is now you're kind of on this hamster wheel of needing to go in and send broadcast emails again and again and again, whether it be for nurturing or for pitching, where what I'm trying to do with the course is to help people think, look, it doesn't need to be overwhelming. You can know what's happening. You can mitigate the risk of too many emails going out or mixed messages or whatever else. If you do that right, you're going to be in the position where you don't need to go in to UserList or ConvertKit or Drip or whatever else all the time to send out new messages. You can just kind of set it up initially, let it run, you know, occasionally review the data to see if there's anything we can try to, you know, make better or whatever else. But your time, I think, is best spent not keeping a list warm or pitching people to get them to buy your stuff. Instead, it's getting people into that funnel. And it's also in improving the product or creating new products or whatever it might be.
I have so many questions for you now. Now that you've touched upon like every single pain point in email software, I recall the early days, and please, I'm going to say a challenging thought now. Yeah. I recall you having like a crazy complicated system of tags in Drip or other software. And now you're such a great advocate for structured data and custom fields or properties. What, like, in UserList, we didn't even ever add tags. We only properties. because Benedict has like personal feelings against tags.
Yeah.
What was the turning point when you converted from having tags towards being a proponent of structured data?
It was honestly just getting, like, I bought into the segment your list through tags thing. And I at first thought, well, okay, yeah, tags do have their use. You know, you tag them if they're a customer, or you tag them if they, I don't know, are on your newsletter or whatever else. But then I started to think about, well, what would this look like in a database, right? So, you know, at the end of the day, I'm still a developer. And I think if I was in a database, or if I was setting up a users table in a database, would I ever have a column or a field in that database that is something like customer, true, false? No, I would do the thing that I learned back when I was learning Ruby on Rails, where instead you have a customer at, where the value of it is the date they became a customer. And if it's blank, they're not a customer. And that gives us already out of the gate so much more than tagging gives you, because you can actually know when they became a customer, not just that they are a customer, but it achieves the exact same end goal, which is a way to segment somebody into customer versus non-customer. So yeah, I mean, early on, I was absolutely just doing the best practice of, at this point, Drip, which was, and everyone was obsessed, and they still are, of like, you know, oh, you know, tag your subscribers when they do this, or tag them when they do that. And unfortunately, a lot of the integrations with these platforms, so Teachable and so on, they only allow for tags. So you can't operate in any other way. Like, everyone is so biased towards an inferior method of segmentation. So early on, yeah, I frankly, even though I came from a developer background, I did what I thought was best practice around email marketing automation. But then I started to look at my own setup and I looked at other people that I knew's backends and I would see a lot of mess. And I eventually wanted to think, well, look, you know, when I started out coding, I was a cowboy coder, as we called it. We just kind of threw code at the problem and hoped it would work. But then as I got to be a better programmer, I started writing tests. I started documenting my work because I knew that there's two things that could happen. Either somebody else gets added to the team and they need to know how this works. So that's where documentation and testing and so on come into place. But then there's my future self a year from now, who's going to go and mess with something and it's going to break five other things. And I'm going to forget about that. And I think we all kind of, as developers, learn this over time, that you want to be doing this stuff, not because anyone likes to write documentation or because we like to write tests, but because we're kind of ensuring ourselves, like our code bases are valuable. If it's a SaaS product, this is our business, our code base. If it breaks, if it screws up customer stuff, that hurts us badly. But the same is true of email marketing setups, because even though it's not a code base in the traditional sense, it's powering my business. As I'm on this call, people join my email list. They're getting timed emails and all that kind of stuff that are ultimately, hopefully, going to make me money, right? So the, you know, even though it's not the same thing as code, it's still just as valuable as an asset for me as a code base, an email marketing setup. That's why, you know, over time I started to kind of scrape my knees the same way I did when I started coding and figured out, okay, I've been segmenting wrong. And unfortunately, unlike with coding, where in the programming world, people would go and write really good books about, you know, test-driven development and clean code and things like that. But the same didn't exist or hasn't really existed in the email marketing world. Instead, you had all the vendors, all the email marketing products were telling their audiences and their customer base to tag their list, and they would bias their software to only work with tags or to embrace tags, right? So a lot of self-learning is kind of the long answer to that question.
When we try to create content about the challenging technical stuff in UserList for our customers and readers, myself as a writer, I struggle a lot because, yes, having the expertise there, I can write meaningful content, but even myself, I find it super boring to read. Like, because you've got to show examples, you've got to include, you know, pieces of actual, you know, conditions and sequences and all that stuff. Even if I figure out the way to represent it nice, it's still super boring to consume. How did you solve this in your educational products? Because nobody, I promise you, in the world wants to read like a blog post which like dissects people's like properties and events and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you mean more of the experience from the student perspective?
How did you make it edible for students? Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think all the lessons are over the shoulder screencasts, right? Where I'll kind of start with I'm going to show you over the next few minutes. And then I'd get in and just kind of show people not only how to implement something, but I don't just say, okay, I'm clicking this button, I'm doing that, I'm doing this. I'm kind of talking out loud as I tend to do, where I'm thinking through, all right, well, if we did it this way, this is the long-term effect that this could cause. So we don't want to do it that way. So, you know, I would kind of catch myself midway through the recording, and none of my recordings were scripted. So you kind of see me kind of stumble through the problem sometimes live. And apparently people really like that, because what they're getting is they're not just getting a technical training. They're getting here's the problem we're trying to solve in this, you know, in this video. And here's Brennan trying to solve it kind of in real time. Obviously, I already know how I'm going to solve it at the end of it, but sometimes there's nuances that I think about even midway through recording. So yeah, I mean, I found that for me, like none of the materials is written. The only exception would be I do have a cheat sheet on Liquid where I went through and listed out every possible, you know, for both Drip and ConvertKit, the objects you have available, subscriber object or campaign object also in Drip, the available filters that you can use along with how to use them and where you would want to use them. So that's really the only written thing that I have. But the rest are just me kind of either, some of them are talking head where it's me, you know, in front of the camera and I'm talking about big picture, how to better understand your list and coming up with a segmentation strategy, and then using, you know, open-ended questions to your email list to come up with discrete segmentation options that you can then start to automatically collect. So that would be a little more of a talking head video, but then the majority of the content is me sharing my screen in ConvertKit and Drip, where I am showing a, you know, in this lesson, we're going to show how you can automatically text all of your subscribers when they're going through an evergreen pitch to get not only, so they're not only getting emails from you when it's time to buy, but they're also getting a text message saying, hey, your personalized enrollment window for getting user list for 20% off starts today. Click this link to act on it or something. So I'm showing people how you can do that in an email marketing product that doesn't have built-in SMSing. And I'm showing them not only how to do it, but also ways you should think about it. So how do you collect the phone numbers? How do you get people to give up their phone numbers if they're in an email course? Why should they give it up? And I talk through that kind of stuff, the strategic stuff, while I also cover the technical stuff.
Would you say that different email automation tools, each of them provide different challenges to people? Or is it mostly the same stuff, just different angles of solving that?
The development of most email marketing software that I've seen tends to start with simply broadcast emails with very simple linear campaigns, right? So like, here's an email sequence. Email one goes out immediately, wait 2 days, send email two, and so on. And then eventually they all kind of unroll visual automations, which are just like those sequences or those campaigns, but with the ability to have branching logic. Mostly speaking, at the end of the day, most are set up in a similar fashion where you have the ability to say, given a pool of subscribers, whether they be on different lists or a single list, or whether you have a big pool of subscribers that you can segment down by, you know, different saved criteria. Like if customer at is set, this is our list of customers. Or if, favorite color equals red, this is everyone who has favorite color of red. So they all kind of operate usually with, at a minimum, custom fields. Most of them don't, exceptions being things like user list or even products like customer.io, don't have tagging. So they focus on, you know, you have fields that can be, or properties that can be attached to a contact. Tags are basically just properties, but really limited, you know, as I talked about a second ago. So they all kind of work like that. And then they eventually tend to all have, you know, this kind of branching logic that will let you have more routable automation, if that makes sense. And then when it comes to email templating, I think the good ones use Liquid as the method of doing email templating. Some of them, like MailChimp and ActiveCampaign, have their own homegrown method that's really horrible. While I think ActiveCampaign has some strengths, I would never use it just because their email templating is so bad. And then you have some like Klaviyo, which again, I'm not that familiar with, but I have had to touch it a bit. And they have some structural API issues that would keep me away from it. Because if the product doesn't have a good API, then that means very few things can play with it nicely. So, you know, my rule of thumb is what has a solid API, meaning it's built correctly, I think, has a good templating. I don't mean the visual templating. I mean, you know, being able to conditionally show different content. And my rule of thumb there is, you know, Liquid. If Twig, which is another great templating language, made itself into one of these products, I think that would be fine too. But most are using Liquid. And then most, when it comes to database management, are using at a minimum fields, and then some add tags, some add lists, which are kind of like a super tag type thing. And yeah, but I mean, to answer your question, I think like most products are kind of trying to do ultimately the same thing, but some of them will add positioning things, like Klaviyo is full on Shopify with different native integrations that make Shopify stuff great with Klaviyo, you know, and yeah.
Do you think the choice of email software really defines how successful you can be with it?
At the upper limits, yes. But I think most people, if they, I really do think 90, 95% even of effectiveness can come from doing even just standard, you know, like a drip campaign that everyone's getting the same email spaced a few days apart with a really core offer or a good offer at the end of it. You can go really far with that. But where the advanced stuff or the really the well-designed products can really help is by saying, well, okay, we're doing this pitch, but what if we can lead score somebody and we can say, we don't want to pitch them until we think that they are sufficiently ready to be pitched. So they're most receptive. Or we want to maybe change the emails themselves to make it so the pitch they get is very super specific to them and the needs that they've told you either behaviorally through what they've done or specifically with maybe a, when they were opting in, you asked some questions of them and they told you the answers to these questions. So that's kind of stuff that I don't think will make or break in any way, but they can multiply. So the making or breaking of is the difference between, you know, you have a newsletter and that's it versus you have a really good onboarding system that sends really good, high quality educational content, which then culminates with a pitch and that pitch is really effective. That's a huge, massive jump, right? But then the jump from the latter bit, you know, the automation to really personalized automation that's very specific. That's obviously done right, gonna, you know, further increase performance and sales, but it's not as make or break as that first jump, if that makes sense.
A lot of our listeners are SaaS founders, so they have the quest of building some sort of evergreen automation, their marketing list, and info product folks typically have a much better understanding, and they also have many more assets to leverage. They have freebies, discounts, courses. Their purchases are much more impulse buys than software. So what are the foundational principles or assets that the founder can leverage when setting that evergreen email automation system for their marketing email list?
Yeah, good question. So I think the reason info product people tend to do email better is because most info products historically have been sold over email during a closed window. So, you know, Ramit Sethi launches his course this week, and that's done over email usually. Whereas most software companies are built where somebody comes to your marketing website, they decide on their terms to sign up for a trial or to buy or whatever else. So I think it's software, at least the non-enterprise software, has always been more self-serve. Whereas a lot of info product people historically have had these kind of closed launches where a product is open for enrollment for a week and then it gets shut down and then the list is kept live over email. And then 3 months later, same thing. So, but to answer your question about the what can software people do to kind of copy a lot of the success that email marketers have who are selling information products or digital products, I think the big thing is if you have a blog and you're getting a lot of search traffic. This was a big eye-opener for me with back when I was running PlanScope, where I was running a project management tool for freelancers. So what I did is I thought, well, I'll write about freelancing stuff and put it on the blog. And this could be how to get clients or how to raise your rates or how to, you know, network or whatever else. Things that have zero to do with project management. But if you read these, you probably would like potentially a project management tool for freelancers because you're probably a freelancer. So that was my thinking going into it. But the mistake that I made was thinking that if somebody goes to Google and types in, how do I get new clients? And they find your article and they get to the end of it, meaning they've read it, they like it. And then your call to action there is something about your software, project management software. Unless that software is going to help them get clients, it's a disconnect. It doesn't make any, there's no relation to what they just read. So what I started doing with PlanScope, and this was, again, 8 years ago, maybe 9 years ago now, was a 5-day crash course on how to be a better freelancer that I would then put as the focus of the articles they'd read. So they'd come to from Google, they'd find an article. They're not in a software buying mood. They're not even thinking about project management software, probably. So they read an article, it's informational, it's helpful. And then there's a 5-day, become a better freelancer in the next 5 days, opt-in. That worked really well. And it worked well in the sense that people would then opt in. And then over the next 5 days, I'd kind of talk about all the different things that I think the ideal freelancer should be doing. But there was always this focus on eventually, you know, I'd casually mention PlanScope, but eventually I'd tell them specifically about PlanScope, and I would position the product as the encapsulation of everything I just talked about. So things like, you know, open communication and transparency with your clients, where your clients don't just get an invoice, they actually know how their money is being spent and what results are coming from the money they're spending. And PlanScope, our software, does this all for you. So I always try to give people, I guess, this kind of, you know, have an asset like an email course that's very in line with the free stuff they'll read from you. Or if you're going on a podcast, you can pitch the email course at the end of the podcast, or you're on stage at a conference, same thing, where people can kind of go through and learn something really valuable from a sequence of emails that will make them better off than they were before they opted in. And then once they've gone through that, they know you, hopefully, at this point, they trust you, they know what you have to teach and so on. And what you've done is you've kind of, in a way, created a customer, because at this point, you now have somebody who's going to be receptive to you saying, here's software that fits this model and solves this problem. And at this point now, they know that that problem exists because you've taught them it in the email course. So then you could basically give them two options, or really three options. You can either say, ignore everything you've just learned and keep doing what you've been doing. That probably hasn't been working. That's option one. Option two would be go and continue with trial and error and piece together your own system for making it so you have better communication with your clients and that your clients are happy with the work you do and blah, 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 blah. Figure that out yourself. Or option three is the shortcut. And it's the software that I've built that 100% fits into this thing that I've taught you. And, you know, this is where you could add some urgency. Like if you join in the next, you know, 4 days, you can get a discount, or I'll give you some bonus if you sign up for a trial, or I'll personally help you onboard you or something like that. And that's kind of the thing that I think a lot of us could be doing in SaaS. Cause I think a lot of us think that the big friction is the button red, or should it be green, or is our, do we need to A/B test our hero or something like that? But a lot of the friction is not about the sign up form. It's about the, do I really need software like this? And is my team really going to be receptive to this? And how can this, you know, potentially benefit me beyond what it's saying on the marketing site? And that's where you give somebody something that is free to enroll in. It's, you know, very thought out and pragmatic. And it's focused on, in our case, with the right message, what you should be thinking about. You know, is marketing automation or marketing personalization something that you should be considering in your business? And I would walk them through step by step. Here's what you can do. Here's where it might not work. Here's where it might work. And of course, all of this being personalized to their unique business type and the products they use. So the, you know, what they would integrate with if they signed up for us. And then at the end of it, my goal is just to say, like, look, here's two paths you can go down. You can either not do anything or kind of figure it out on your own, or we've built software that 100% fits this thing. So if you're nodding your head after going through this email course with, yes, this is how I think about, I want my customers to get better, more relevant messages from me. Yes, that's what I want. Oh, I've seen examples and case studies of companies that have done that. And now it's your choice. Do you want to do it or don't you want to do it? And yeah, I think there's a lot of application for pretty much most software companies where you could do something similar.
Are there any companies out there who are absolutely killing it with their email marketing? And talking software companies, not probably more than just all companies in the world.
Yeah, good question. So with email marketing, I'm not on a lot of SaaS companies lists. Let's just put it that way. So I'm racking my head through the companies that I think have done this right. I do think so there's the educational bit where I think people like Ruben Gomez have done really well with both BidSketch and DocSketch for that, where he's put together something very similar to what I just talked about, where you're meeting somebody where they are now and bringing them to the point of being your ideal customer. So, you know, I definitely check out both BidSketch and DocSketch for examples of that, I think, done right. There's obviously a lot of companies that do, I think, well on the content marketing over email thing, where they're creating and penning original content and they're sending it to their list on a weekly basis. And this content is, you know, HelpScout does pretty well at this, HubSpot does well at this. But I wouldn't say it's as systematic as what I just described, where you have intentionally designed assets that are meant to create customers long-term and then give them a very specific pitch window for them that aligns with what they've told you or how they've behaved. I know a lot of people on the creator slash digital product side who are doing that, but, and I don't want to tout right message, but we're doing some of that too, which should make sense. But yeah, I think a lot of it is, frankly, I don't opt in yet to enough SaaS lead magnets to know how many of them are doing something like that.
One more practical question. How do you create a system of delivering your content so that it's evergreen, not just a blog post that's broadcasted once and then forgotten and lost in the void?
So usually when somebody goes through this onboarding, this LBPS model that I just talked about, where you're onboarding and then pitching, we'll usually go into what I call a shadow newsletter or an evergreen newsletter, which is really just for those of us who are in the kind of business where information doesn't change weekly. So you obviously can do this for if you were covering, I don't know, COVID or something, because it wouldn't make sense. But if you're teaching people freelancing or if you're teaching people email marketing, these things don't really change that frequently, like the underlying tactics and strategies. So what I think is a better approach for a lot of us would be to do something where when somebody's onboarded and they've gone through and now they're kind of on your email list, instead of just throwing them into the stream headfirst of hey, they joined Tuesday, today's Wednesday, they happen to be getting random, part two email of a newsletter series that I'm writing, that's not a great first experience for them. Whereas I tend to find if I can instead curate content that is dripped out weekly, so it achieves the same thing as an email newsletter would, a weekly newsletter, but instead it's more scheduled and it's curated in such a way where ideally if they've told you something like I'm just starting out freelancing, that maybe the first 12 articles, 3 months content will be focused on helping somebody start a freelancing business, where you're just linking them to existing, or you're basically resending existing blog posts or email newsletters or whatever that you've written before from when you initially launched that new article or that new piece of content. So yeah, I mean, this is the thing that I really do think should be the main thing that most of us focus on. And that is some combination of an evergreen newsletter, like the one at Double Your Freelancing is 52 weeks long. So meaning somebody can join my list today, go through the onboarding, get put onto it. And for a whole year, they're going to get a weekly article. And what's great is that it's not just an article they're sending. I'm also backing that article with something that I call an offer funnel, where what it's doing under the hood is it's saying, all right, this subscriber, let's say it's with Right Message. So when they join our list, we want them to sign up for a trial, and then we want them to complete their trial. And then if they've completed and they're a customer, we want them to upgrade to annual. And then if they've churned, we want to get them back, right? So that's kind of the path that people go down. So what we've done is when we send out a newsletter, the footer of that, so you get the bit of content with like a article, featured article or something. And then also in that email message is a call to action that is dynamic based off of where they are in that funnel. So with SaaS, it would be if they've never signed up for a trial, we would try to encourage them to. So there'd be a specific call to action at the bottom of every weekly email that would be focused on that. If they are a paying customer, we try to get them to either upgrade to a higher tier or to upgrade to annual if they're paying monthly. If they've canceled, it's often things like, hey, I'd love to, looks like you've at one point tried Right Message. Love to know what's holding you back from giving us another shot. Feel free to reply to this email and let us know. So we have different things that we're automatically including depending on where somebody is in that offer funnel. And I do the same with Double Your Freelancing. So depending on what somebody's bought, have they bought Double Your Freelancing Rate? Great. Pitch them on the blueprint. Have they bought the blueprint? Great. Pitch them on the videos from the conference. And some of it's randomized, but a lot of it is very linear. And that's great for me because I know that I can stop writing content on a weekly basis. And the majority of people, obviously, if they've got through the whole 52 weeks of material, they're not getting anything. So then they'd only get the live content. But the majority of people who are early in their relationship with me or within the first year are getting, they're hearing from me weekly. They're getting valuable content from me weekly that's curated in such a way that makes sense for when they're getting it. And in each of these email messages, both in the email themselves, along with if they click through to the website to read the blog post, they're seeing effectively advertisements that are presenting what I think the next step should be for them. So I think you should buy double your freelancing rate, and here's why. Obviously, it's not said like that, but basically that's what I'm trying to get across. And that works well because I know that I can largely, I mean, these aren't hard sells, but it's kind of constantly promoting something that I think somebody should do next while also keeping my brand in front of somebody on a weekly basis.
Such great advice. To wrap up today's episode, could you give us two quick bits of advice again on one do and one don't for people who want to use email automation software?
Yeah, so I think the do would be to really, like what we've been talking about with things like ensuring your future success, right? So keeping things clean from day one. Don't letting things kind of go wild with how you're segmenting and not knowing how things are happening. And this includes things like how you name different automations, you know, having a naming strategy, have a convention for what you do, along with kind of really understanding that ultimately you don't want to be in the position where you're kind of glued to logging in and creating new content all the time. It's not good for you because it keeps you distracted, but it's also really not ideal usually for your recipients. That would be my do, is to do what you can to ensure that you've got a really solid system in place that's well documented. My don't would be, I mean, outside of the easy route and just saying, don't do what I said you should, you know, don't do the opposite of that. My don't would be, I see a lot of people who will say, well, I'm going to use MailChimp because it's free for 2,000 people or something. And then when I outgrow it, I will move to a real, I mean, MailChimp can do a lot, but, you know, something a little more powerful, you know, email platform. And I see this pretty regularly. And usually it's people who are just starting out in business and don't want to lay down 30 a month, 50 a month, whatever the price point might be for the entry level plan for an email marketing product that is probably better for them. But the problem is it is so hard to move platforms. I think that the mistake that I see people make is they're kind of locked into one product, which can't do everything they need it to. And then you've already got people flowing into it through different forums or integrations or whatever else. And then you've got people flowing in, you know, through it through different automations. And it becomes really hard to migrate. So I mean, that's a good thing if you run a software company or an email marketing product company, because once they're in, the churn rate is probably going to be low. But it's for those of us as customers, I would say don't cheap out and use the free stuff when you're just starting out, if you're serious about what you're building.
Actually, what you mentioned is a double-edged sword for a software company, because we also do struggle to make people convert from their previous platform. So it's low churn, low activation kind of puzzle for us.
Yeah.
And it has always been.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's good. Like, and I know from us having talked about userless stuff, I know it's hard because, you know, you've got the free email marketing products out there, which are just, you know, trying to get you in early on, which oftentimes they can't do that much. But then it's so, I think the number one thing that has held people back from going to a better product that I've spoken with has been it's not just the time, but it's also the risk. Like, what if they unsubscribe from MailChimp and then I import them and bring them over to UserList or something, and now UserList thinks they're subscribed, and then I send them an email and I'm going to get so much hate from them. And, you know, I think a lot of people fear that. I tend to think unnecessarily, because usually if they write back and say, hey, I unsubscribed, you could just say, yeah, sorry, we moved platforms and you must have unsubscribed after we did that migration, and blah, 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 won't happen again. That's usually fine. Most people are fine with that, I think. But yeah, I do think there's so much stress around migration. And that's why I think, you know, definitely, you know, research the tool that is going to give you what you need and fits the profile of the kind of company you want to do business with, instead of just going for the lowest thing. Because like I talked about, this is going to be, if you do it right, the email marketing component is going to be probably the most valuable asset, or one of the most valuable assets in your, you know, if you're a software company, it's the next most valuable thing next to your software code base, I think. So definitely make sure you're not skimping on that.
Thanks so much for great advice, Brennan. Where can people find more of your work, your products online?
There's rightmessage.com, which is the software company that I mentioned. And then the more of the email marketing stuff, there's createandsell.co. I couldn't get the .com, but .co. If you go there /user list, so createandsell.co/user list, I'm actually like Jane mentioned, I'm going to be working soon on a brand new course, the third course of the mastering series, this one on mastering user list. So if you go there, it'll get you on the email list, but it'll also secure basically a launch discount for you when that comes out, which we're hoping will come out, you know, sometime this year in 2021. So go there. And that's the best way to kind of get the content I send out on a weekly basis and also to hear about mastering user list.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Brennan. And have a wonderful rest of your week.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks for listening. If you found the episode useful, please spread the word about this new show on Twitter, mentioning UserList, or leave us a review on iTunes.